Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to another night of Full Spectrum Radio. I am Matt, and with me always is Dennis. What's going on, buddy?
It's just another wonderful day. I've discovered why brick-and-mortar places are starting to close up, board their doors, and pretty much everything comes from online now.
And what
this
kind
is
of
my
stuff?
Well, this is my mini rant. Screw you, James River Equipment, and your overrated, overpriced John Deere parts. $58 I could have bought the coil for the riding mower that I was given online. However, it would have been 3 to 5 days to get it. Well, I didn't want to wait 3 to 5 days. I had already driven 20 miles to go get the damn thing. So instead of paying $58 and $8 shipping, I paid $93. You jackasses. Okay, mini rant over. But I will say this, I did get the riding mower fixed. The only drawback to my riding mower, like I said, it was given to me. It was an old one. Son-in-law's father had passed away. He had a couple of them sitting around the farm. The only drawback to it is there is no beer can holder. So that is my next repair on it. I have to get one of the little gimbal mount beer can holders. I mean, water bottle holders. You know, you get thirsty mow in the yard.
Yeah, and dehydrated in the Virginia sun. And let me ask you this. Can you get a DUI on a riding mower?
Yes.
Because you can in Illinois.
You can in Virginia also. And the reason so, you are in control of a motorized vehicle. Now, here in Virginia, even if you are on a scooter, a moped, whatever, even if it's one of, like, if you remember back in the day, they had the little gas-powered engine and the little drive wheel that would power your front bicycle tire.
Yeah,
you can get it on that, too, because it's a motorized vehicle.
Yeah, one of my friends a few years ago was cutting his lawn. He was right at the outskirt of, you walk out your front door, you got your steps and, you know, stoop and all that kind of stuff. He was on the first pass just along his flower bed, the farthest point away from the street. Then he was doing like 2 miles an hour maneuvering around, had a beer in his hand, and got a DUI on his own property.
I thought that was a little... officer was just a dick, to be frank with you.
Yeah, I'm sure if he's at home doing lawn or doing yard work or something like that, you know, maybe if he's a beer drinker or whatever, maybe he likes Bartles and James wine coolers. I don't know. But I'm sure he'll probably have a beverage or something. You know, gardening, doing whatever. Yard work.
No, I'm sure. But I don't know, dude. I think it's just, I think the officer was a jackass.
Yeah.
I mean,
The funniest part about it is, well, it's really not funny because that's just plain stupid, but the funniest part about the stupidity is what pissed my buddy off more is that he goes, I had the thing in turtle because I was doing tight turns. He goes, how the hell do you get a DUI in turtle? I'm like, you're moving, right? He goes, yep. He's like, at least let me bump it up to Jackrabbit before you're going to actually give me a breathalyzer and a sobriety test and all that. But, Yep. Got a DUI in turtle.
Well, the question I have to ask is, why did the officer even bother? You know, unless, if this individual had run-ins with the officer before and, you know, disrespected him, then, of course, the officer is gunning for him to begin with. But,
yeah.
Hell, who knows, dude? This world's full of jackasses. Just because somebody has a badge doesn't mean they can't be a jackass.
Yeah. Oh, back to your riding more parts. So you drove 20 miles to a store that wasn't open, or the one that was local wasn't?
No. All right. Well, John Deere has a pretty much lock on their shit. I went to two other places. They were not able to find a part number for this coil because John Deere won't share that shit. Now, see, I'm a little smarter than they are. I went on Google, and here's part number. You got this? Nope. It's a Kawasaki / John Deere only part. Well, damn. So, I think it's a combination of James River Equipment and John Deere both. Can kiss my lily white ass. I needed deck belt for it. I went to O'Reilly Auto Parts and bought a deck belt rather than go back to John Deere. So, there. Had they not ripped me off on the coil, I would have gone back to them to get the drive belt. No. Now I just feel ripped off.
You gotta love monopolizing.
Yeah, well, and, you know, like I said, the way that they have their and whatnot, you know, two other places couldn't even pull a part number. Just made me pissed off. Other than that, I did get the riding mower fixed. You mentioned Turtle and Jackrabbit, and those are speeds that the mower will go. mine, even in its highest gear, fastest moving, I could get off and ghost crawl this thing. You know what ghost walking or ghosting your vehicle is? That's where you get out and walk beside it and let it drive itself? Yeah. This thing moves slower than molasses on a cold winter day in Missouri. But it beats the hell out of pushing one. I'm good.
True. That is definitely true.
Yeah. So let's move on to something totally different. I will describe how my last weekend went. For those that have seen my Facebook wall, you will have seen a picture that I was tagged in with a mark down my back. Have you seen that picture?
But I think you cut out when you said which one it was. What picture?
The picture of me with the scratch marks down my back.
Yes.
Okay. This happened at the Exchange Hotel. Now, they have coming up, let me find this one. I'm surprised it's not on theirs, but that's all right. I know where to find it. Our buddies over at Twisted Paranormal are doing another public and tour and investigation. That's coming up on July 18, $25 a person. And I'll tell you what, the Exchange Hotel is a phenomenal place. If you get the chance to go investigate there, go do it. But July 18th, 8 p.m. to midnight, Twisted Paranormal is doing another tour and investigation. But I don't recommend playing an authentic rebel yell in the depot building. Apparently someone out there got pissed off at me.
That's how that came out?
Yes. Now, I know I've given history before on this location. The hotel itself was a Civil War hospital. It was a receiving hospital. It was one of what was considered to be like 59 in the state. It's, as far as we know, one of only 9 left standing. Receiving hospital took in both Union and Confederate troops. There is approximately 70,000 soldiers that were taken through there. We don't know how many died before they got into the actual hospital. If the hospital, which they have fantastic records, which I'm amazed the books are still around, but, you know, everybody that came through and was treated, they have notes on it. So they treated about 70,000 people. How many came through the depot, which was where they would have came before they went into the hospital, is unknown. The depot was a building that sat literally right at the railroad tracks, and they would roll the rail cars up. They'd slide the door open on the side of the rail car, slide the door open on the side of the building. If you had a pulse, you were taken into the hospital and treated. If you had a really weak, they didn't find a pulse, you were thrown in the body stack. The body stack, I've seen photographs. They're 4 bodies wide, head to toe, 2 deep. And the body stack would go to the rafters. They're 12-foot rafters. If you had a weak pulse and you were mistakenly thrown in the body stack, odds were good, that's where you died. They've got notes on roughly 5,000 plus that died in the hotel. Just overall a very active place. And between Lyle and them over at Twisted Paranormal, they do a fantastic tour. Just very informative to begin with. And first thing that we did was listen to Chris and Angel, who actually runs the Exchange. tell a little history about it, and a little history of the area, a little history of the battles that went on. Then broke the group, broke into groups. I stayed in the depot all evening. They had three groups go through of about seven people in each group. So it's not like they're, you know, jamming 30 people in one area where you can't get shit for information or you know, quality on the tour. You know, you're able to have small enough groups that you can actually rely on what you capture. And if you're lucky enough, you're in the group that when I decide to do something a little out of the ordinary, you get to be around when the proverbial defecation hits the whirling oscillator. And that's pretty much what happened. I was on my knees in the middle of the room, got a little speaker plugged into my cell phone. I went to YouTube, found the real Rebel Yell, played that in there, and next thing I feel is like this, I don't know, just a strange sensation, like I'd, something touched my back. I don't know if I was poked or what. Immediately I came up and I went into an upright position. I went, what the hell was that? Lyle was standing, I don't know, 3-4 feet off to my left. Going, did you hit me with something? No, what the hell is wrong? I'm like, dude, check my back. Pulled my shirt up, and I've got two marks, I don't know, 6 inches long or so down my back. So I don't know what the hell it was. You know, if it was, oh, hell. Texting or in chat going, I was right beside you, my friend. Your reaction was priceless. Wish I had caught it on video. Well, no shit. But I don't know. Maybe it was a soldier, you know, hit me with the bayonet. I have no idea. But my response was, I found what pissed you off, didn't I? Yeah, apparently I did. But just overall, a fantastic location. Some of the EVPs that were captured were amazing. I think one of the, now I haven't got through all of my audio. I had three stationary recorders running in the depot, and then the one that I was moving around with at all times, of course. Even though I stayed all night in the depot, I always keep one on my person. Earlier in the evening, before the investigations even started, I strolled through the hotel itself and, you know, kept a recorder. I don't know. Recorder to me is just a, it's a permanent fixture anywhere I go. I mean, you never know when the hell they're going to get something. So I haven't made it through all roughly 16 hours of audio that I have. So we'll see. Hopefully I got something very well worthwhile.
Yeah, it'll definitely be interesting to see if anything coincides with the experience. Speaking of tours and events, there is a really, really good one in Louisiana as well. You got that?
Okay. Go ahead.
The NOLA one.
Oh, yes. Yeah, tours and events. And if anybody cares to go to New Orleans, which is rumored to be the most haunted city in America, I have a very strong recommendation for you here as to who to contact. So here you go.
Going to New Orleans for the weekend, for vacation? Are you wanting to take a ghost hunting tour but tired of the same old walking tours where you don't even get to go into the locations? and you're not even sure if the history is accurate? Well, call NOLA Ghost Hunting Tours. This team of guys are going to take you into a real haunted location where you're going to get to use the state-of-the-art equipment that ghost hunters use. Be the paranormal investigator. You get to work with an experienced, competent team of investigators and have the real, true paranormal experience. Experience the dark side of New Orleans. Call NOLA Ghost Hunting Tours. They have tours Friday through Monday. Tours start at 7 and at 10 p.m. For more information, call 504-708-3567.
Yes, folks, if you happen to be in that area or you're taking a trip there, if you've had any interest in the unknown, supernatural, whatever you want to classify it as, give them a shout. It is a great, great group of people. Very, very professional. They're not the people that go out and say, oh, everything that... or everything that you think, every knock, every bump, oh, that must have been a ghost. No, they do their due diligence to slow it down, check it out, basically try and debunk whatever situation happened, and then go through it. So it's, highly recommended by us. As far as the basis of the show for the evening, it's kind of straying away from paranormal as we do quite often. And Dennis, if you want to give a little information on what we are doing and the purpose of what we're doing, since it's so closely tied to you, that would be awesome.
All right. Well, I can do that. Sit back and brace yourselves, ladies and gentlemen. Tonight's going to be a strange show. A couple of years ago, October 20, 2012 to be exact, I had a friend of mine that I pretty closely considered like a little sister to me. 20 years old. I had spoken to her the day before. She was found dead from a single gunshot wound to the head. The coroners ruled this a suicide. I don't believe it was, and I will tell you why. The single ESW was to the back left of her head, behind her ear. Believe the caliber was 9mm, and Brittany was right-handed. Now, she had painted with me on numerous occasions, had worked with me for quite a while, lived with my family for about 3 months. I knew this girl pretty well. Like I said, I considered her like my little sister. It was a rather tragic blow. And then to have it ruled suicide. I took it as a personal hit because when I was 16, my brother's death was also ruled a suicide. He was found hanging in a tree. I knew from that date it wasn't a suicide. It just wasn't his style. Now, granted, there was a note left, but it had been wadded up and thrown away as though he had changed his mind. With Brittany, however, to my knowledge, there was no note found. When I spoke with her the day before, she was as happy-go-lucky, just a beautiful, bright, wonderful person that I had known for the probably 3 to 4 years that I had known her. I took it as a personal hit when they ruled it a suicide simply because I felt like I failed again. So that's the basis of tonight's show. We're going to dive into what occurred. We have Ray Johnson joining us later on. He is a retired homicide detective, Chicago Police Department. Unfortunately, Mushaka Benson was going to join us also, but there's some issues, health issues that popped up in his family this evening. He's going to be contending with that. So, Mushaka, if you're listening, brother, I certainly hope that whatever issues arose are over quickly and everybody comes out of it just fine. But that's where we're at. I'm sure that everybody at some point in time has had some sort of tragedy befall their family. But the main reason for tonight is we're going to see if we can get this case reopened. And in chat, I will be putting up a hashtag that we're going to try to get trending. You'll start seeing it more and more and more on each and every one of my posts, simply because the idea is if we get this hashtag to trend, we can take that to the Commonwealth Attorney and see if they will open the door and talk to us. Alicia is a very dear friend of mine that I've known for, I don't know, 4 years, 5 years, 6 years, hell, I don't even know. She was very, very close with Brittany. She is trying very hard. She actually had an appointment scheduled today for 1 o'clock, and I'm going to put him on blast. Detective West with Henrico County Police Department. He was the original investigator on the death investigation. Well, for whatever reason, and he would not share, he simply called Alicia this morning, told her that he cannot meet with her today, will not meet with her in the future. He said there are many reasons, many factors, but he can't go into them. When she asked him, well, can I ask you a question? He said no and hung up. So Detective West and Henrico County Police Department, I assure you, sir, you will be hearing more from us later on.
Well, and I'm just to keep this completely, or any ties out, but you'll understand what I mean by the question. And unfortunately, because of the question, I can't release information unless you're good with it. That's up to you, but I will not. Does anybody that you know this person? The detective?
No.
Okay.
Not that I'm aware of.
And I assume he's still an active member of Henrico County.
Yes. He is still a active detective. I actually spoke with another detective at Henrico County. I'm not friends with him, but I'm familiar with him because he's the one that did the investigation and the criminal prosecution on the two little heroin addicts that broke into my truck back in, September, October, and stole all my shit.
Yeah.
I can call them heroin addicts. As a matter of fact, I'll even throw their names out there just because I'm so pissed off at them. Parker Pappas is one of them, and his wife, Jenna Van Allen Pappas. Both of them were charged with the crime. Both of them pled guilty to a lesser charge, which really pissed me off. It went from two felonies each to one misdemeanor each. They broke into my truck in the middle of the night, stole a little over $4,000 worth of my tools. He pawned some of my shit at one pawn shop, and she pawned some of my shit at another pawn shop. So, yeah, they were charged, convicted. So I can put their names out because it's public record. So if any of the listeners is familiar with Parker Keith Pappas or his lovely wife, Jenna Van Allen Pappas,
keep your shit locked up.
Those thieves. Yes.
So, no, well, the reason I asked that is if anybody that you know knows Detective West and kind of can give you an idea of his professionalism or candor in general to try and figure out why that there would be a meeting canceled, whether there would be a no reschedule for further meeting, or one of two things. The department head said, no, we're not going to meet with this person because they are not a family member. And he agreed to do it, but he was told that that's not allowed to discuss a case with just somebody who knew her or was, you know, close friends with her.
Well, and that was my first thought. However, well, we're going to petition the court to have, you know, full disclosure on all documentation. It's public record. Because it was a death investigation regarding our friend and our law enforcement started this and was involved in it, it is public record. So we will discover it.
Yeah, but there is, as far as, well, the way things work around here, the case file, like the actual full details of the case file, are not public record to anybody but family members. So, like a lot of my close friends that passed away, or they said was a drug overdose, or, you know, something like that, of somebody who never did drugs, but whatever they deem it as, the mother, father, sister, brother, grandmother, you know, and it'll only extend to a first cousin if they have, if I remember correctly, it'll only extend to a first cousin if they have lived with that person or had a constant contact with that person. Like, it's only close family members. It's not like, hey, my buddy, I know you did the investigation. My friend took his life. I want to meet with you about that case. They cannot release that, or they have to ask permission and develop what the relationship is with you and that person. I mean, a lot of times too, if somebody's like engaged to be married, there's no actual true family tie there. It's basically just a dating relationship. Depending on how the case was closed and what was said by the family, they might not release that information either. Nothing against you as a caring person to try and get closure for yourself. That's just by law they can't do it. So I don't know if the guy's a dick. I don't know if he's, you know, just trying to, or just doesn't want to deal with it. But he truly might not be able to.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, there may be some reason that his hands are tied and he has to keep quiet. Let's take a hypothetical. Let's say hypothetically the Commonwealth Attorney is already starting to investigate whether or not they should reopen the case. If that is the case, obviously the detective can't say shit. I understand that.
Yeah.
And if that is the case, obviously the detective can't say, well, listen, I can't talk to you about it because we're starting to investigate whether or not we want to look further into this. At this point, it is considered a closed case. So, you know, my understanding of the law and so forth, according to Freedom of Information Act, we should be able to petition the court, even though we're not blood related, and have those documents released, up to and including the detective's private investigation notes. Now, there is a young man of interest in this, and he had been interviewed, and that was the young man that she was living with. Now, because he wasn't charged or convicted, I won't throw his name out there. However, there's been comments made by other young ladies since then. And, of course, this is only hearsay. I can't testify to it in court. But they've made statements to the effect that he informed them, you know, if you don't perform this sex act or that sex act, well, it might get ugly. And, quote, you know, what they have said was he informed them he got away with murder once, he can do it again. Oh, by the way, this young man is currently in lockup for home burglary with a firearm and possession of a firearm during the commission of a felony. Ironically, it was a handgun that he had on him when he decided to burgle somebody's home.
Then what was the caliber?
Well, that part I'm not sure. It didn't say.
Well, no, actually, that truthfully, that wouldn't matter because of on the death record, the weapon that was used was actually found at the scene. Well, we'll get into a little more of the details later. But,
right.
Yeah, the weapon was recovered at the scene, and I assume it's in evidence lockup.
Well,
it wouldn't be given back.
Well, that's not totally true. There is a very good likelihood that if it was deemed that the owner of the weapon did not discharge the weapon, then it's a very good likelihood that it would have been returned to him.
But
just because it's evidence, which, you know, all of my stolen possessions were evidence, they were returned to me. Now, you know, when my brother was found hanging in the tree, I'm sure if somebody had claimed the rope as theirs, they would have a sick, perverted son of a bitch would actually want the rope, but hey, that's their business.
Well, and that's what I was getting at, too, from a moral aspect, is, like, if she used his weapon, then just said, you know what, I'm done, I can't do this anymore, I'm actually truly not happy no matter what I show the general public and people who encounter and deal with me on a daily basis, how sick of a fuck would you have to be to say, you know what, the girl that I was living with and everything, she killed herself, but I want my gun back. There's a moral aspect there that why would you want that reminder? You know, like every time that you're walking around with your gun on your hip or you go shooting, oh, this person that I loved and cared about killed themselves with this, so yeah, I'm gonna use it for recreation.
You know, I hate to be a jackass, but Yeah, I would want my weapon back. That's
terrible. I would just pay the money for a new one.
I would want it back more as a sentimental thing. Just me. I mean, I would want my weapon back.
Would you ever take a shooting and discharge it, or just...
No, I believe it would be one of those things that I would have to put in there. Put in my gun safe, and it would just be there. I don't know. I couldn't say one way or another whether I would want it back. I would think that I would, but I also don't know. I don't know.
All right. Well, for you, it's a little bit different, and I can understand that. One, because, all right, it's going to sound weird, and I'm diving back into the paranormal on this one. One, it's something that she could be attached to.
Sure.
It creates the memory, but it also keeps her alive for you, not dead. And if she ever did come back because of the tragic event that was attached to this artifact or, you know, possession, it's because that's a way for you to be able to talk to her and try and get her to tell you what happened because of your abilities. You're a little different scenario than just some douchebag, like, piece of crap that breaks into people's houses and steals shit.
Oh, yeah.
You actually did truly care about her.
Well, that's...
I don't mean to judge, but...
Oh, I would have to agree. I don't know. Maybe in his own little sick, twisted way, he did care. I don't know. I never met the boy. She'd been with him 3 weeks, 2 weeks. I never met him.
Well, here's the other X factor into this, too, of ruling out suicide. Like, unless it... I really do want to see the autopsy report and also see the... Like, for what I did, you know, and got from Audrey. Or on Audrey, not from her, I should say.
Yeah, that's what I'm...
I want to see toxicology. I want to see, everything, and go through to see if there was anything that could have... in her system that could have possibly mind-altered her, or... But it still doesn't change the fact of... You don't take a 9mm gun as a right-handed person and put it behind your left ear and pull the trigger. Is it possible that it was easy for her and didn't want, and this is where the psychology of it comes in, is it possible that she mentally did not want to maybe see the flash, feel the pain, or if she wasn't expecting it, she used her left hand and put it behind her left ear? That is possible. Is it the most efficient way? Kinda, because you're not going to get a straight shot to where it can split the lobes. I mean, there's a lot of factors into it. But normally, if somebody's in the mental capacity, they're going to kill themselves. They're not going to go to that extent to plan it out kind of that elaborate. If it's elaborate, it's going to be something elaborate. If it's taking a gun and shooting yourself, that's going to be an instantaneous, almost irrational quick thing. I just want it over with.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It just wasn't her style. So I still think this young man had something to do with it.
There's so many factors of it too, and you know, did they actually check her hand for powder burns? There's just so much forensics that, as of 2012, would have had no problem being done.
Oh yeah, most definitely. But I mean, they could look for gunshot residue. They could, I want to see what the powder burns were on the side of the head, which will give distance from weapon and time of round being discharged, flash burn. So there's all those things that I want to see. It's not, and I apologize to those that are thinking, wow, what a morbid son of a bitch. Now, this isn't morbid curiosity. This is wanting a family to know that, you know, your child didn't do this. This is me thinking that, you know, this girl that I considered to be my little sister, that I didn't let her down to the point that I wasn't there and she gave up. You know, I felt that way as the younger brother when my brother was found dead 20-some years ago. You know, so this is not morbid curiosity. This is wanting to get vindication and, you know, prove that this young lady didn't take her own life.
And for what it's worth, and not because, I mean, when she was still alive, and I've talked to Brittany numerous times with you. Yeah, you know, like I when you were with her and all that stuff. So.
Oh yeah. Well, like I said, she had lived with us for about 3 months, a little over. So, you know, I can. Well, having known her for, you know, about 4 years, the fact that she lived in my home, she worked with me. You know, I'm a self-employed contractor. She was with me damn near 24/7. I never once saw her ingest any sort of drugs. She didn't even like to take Tylenol or anything for a headache. She'd take a nap. I don't know.
For everybody listening to that's part of the campaign. If you actually read into it on the website that I posted, Dennis, you posted it. I don't have it in front of me to throw it up real quick if you do. Which is the campaign is by her aunt, correct?
No, it's actually been started by myself. Well, Alicia started it, and I started pushing it right behind her. But it's off of change.org, and the idea is to petition the Commonwealth Attorney for Raikou County to reopen the death investigation case as seen fit. No, I don't want to call it a suicide investigation because I don't believe it was. Now, because she was so close to me, I won't and haven't used my abilities to talk to her. Because I can't guarantee, I guess, that I won't perceive what is not correct. If I were to try to if I were to try to contact her, you know, through my abilities, I don't know what I would get for a response, and I don't know that I would trust my response to be complete and accurate. You know, I may, for whatever reason, think it the way that I want to see it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I won't do that. But that's where it's at. But we did start a petition through change.org. And the idea is to change what has occurred. So give me a moment. And I'm actually trying to find the change.org statement.
Well, and that's if I had it in front of me, but there were, I thought there was something in there about when they were talking about drugs and this and that, is the niece was mentioned, which is why I was thinking it was started by her aunt.
Yeah, I'm trying to find it right now. Well, it may have been, but I'm trying to find it myself, and as soon as I do, I will read the comment that was posted with it. But I do want to give a shout-out. I know right now that Ryan Jones over at All Seeing Paranormal Society is listening in. Hey, brother.
Hi, Ryan.
Lyle is in chat with us from Twisted Paranormal Society. So,
hey, hi, Lyle.
Thanks for tuning in tonight, brother. And I'm trying to find, as I'm just sitting here, you know, rambling, I'm trying to find the change.org post that I did. And let's see. There we go. Open link in the tab. Petition. Reopen Brittany Nicole Farragut's death investigation as a homicide investigation. You want me to read this whole statement?
Yeah, because then for people who don't know what we're talking about of who she is and we can't relate to it, this is exactly why it's what we're doing.
And right now it has 411 supporters on it. So here we go. We're petitioning Shannon Taylor and Riker County Commonwealth Attorney, 2012. To some, that's just a date, but to many it's the date we lost a sister, a niece, a granddaughter, a cousin, and a friend. Anyone who knew Brittany would always tell you a few things. She was full of life, would do anything to make anyone smile, and always had an infectious smile. At the time of her passing, she had just started living with a new boyfriend, one who would change her date for good. No, not for good, but forever. Brittany was found with a gunshot wound to the head. She was also found with medication in her system and drug paraphernalia in her purse. It was ruled a suicide and immediately closed with little investigation. Brittany hated drugs. She wouldn't even take aspirin for a headache. I can recall multiple times she flipped out when people used or she heard stories about it or anything. She would never take pills, much less have anything marijuana-related on her person. A few people have even made the comments that, and I'll leave his name out, had been forcing her to take certain medications to calm her down so she wouldn't be so outgoing. Brittany also would never, ever commit suicide. She was happy. She loved life. It wasn't always easy, but she would never be selfish enough to take her own life. The weapon used belonged to this young man, and it just happened to not be locked up at the time, and he just happened to not be home when the incident happened. The details around their quote-unquote relationship are all very concerning. She was being controlled. He was very jealous, and he had already struck Brittany in the short 2 weeks they had been together, according to friends. He is now in jail on charges that include using a firearm to commit a felony, and burglary. This is where we need your help. We are attempting to find a way to have her case reopened and investigated as a murder trial. Brittany deserves justice. She doesn't deserve to be labeled just another suicidal teen. We need your help. We are trying to gather as many signatures as we can to send them to the Commonwealth Attorney to have Brittany's case reopened.
Please take a few minutes out of your day to sign this petition to Shannon Taylor, Commonwealth Attorney in Raikou County. We cannot give up on her because you know she would never give up on us. Please share so we can spread the word and find out the true details of what happened to Brittany. There are many comments. Supporters, a young lady named Brittany Grimmett. I once dated Corey Mixon for a year and know firsthand his controlling and abusive behaviors. Another one that says, I knew Brittany as a I love life person. She grew up with my son. I never knew her as a down person. She was at my birthday cookout just a few weeks before this happened. I was shocked and did not believe that she did this to herself. Just wasn't the Brittany I knew. If anything else, it's a matter of the family needs closure. We know this isn't the way that it went down. If you have the time, and if you have the inclination, I'm posting it once again on my Facebook. And by all means, feel free to grab it. Feel free to share it. Feel free to make the hashtag itself go viral. If we get it trending, maybe something of it good can happen. That's just my way of looking at things.
And the whole point behind this is just because of if you even had one conversation with her, that you never would have been able to say anything bad. As far as, and I mean, part of the reason that we're putting our two cents in about this as well is, well, Dennis, you and I have run bus in the past. We've seen a lot of shit, including suicides. We've seen, you know, and also with my background in psychology and abnormal and dealing with depressives and all that stuff, yeah, they can put on a good face and a good front, but not in it doesn't make any sense. Not for her. She wouldn't have been able to hide from you and Hope if it was to that point of being that bad, no matter how good she is, on just the way that you can read people because of her background. One, you know, when you were younger, being a bouncer, and I mean, you can read body language, you can read all that shit. So, and being around her every day for 3 months, that would be something you'd obviously be able to pick up on if there was something wrong.
Yeah, and the fact that I spoke with her just the day before, you know, I picked up nothing. There was, as far as I could tell, nothing wrong. Now, she did relate to me the incident where he struck her about a week earlier and begged me, please don't come kick his ass, which she knew I would do. But Haley, you know, it's not like he beat the living shit out of her. Don't get me wrong. Had that occurred, yeah, that there would have been no question. I'd have been at the door anyway. She didn't tell me in what manner or how he struck her. You know, so I don't know if it was just a simple slap or what. But I gave her fair warning that, if he lays a hand on you again, he better give his heart and soul to God because his ass is mine. Well, at this point, I have no idea what occurred after that. I do know that I lost a very close friend, someone that I cared very much about. I don't know how. Well, I do know how, from a single gunshot wound to the head, but I just know it wasn't her.
Oh, just saw a positive uplifting note. Something totally different, but it actually kind of ties into the show. Mushaka, our dear friend, it was Devaney Penn who posted on Facebook, and I looked it up because I have it as page 2 on my phone under internet. Dwelling hit the Kickstarter $12,000 pitch that they were trying to get. So that's a lock-in that the movie is for sure in production.
Yes, I just saw that, and I was actually going to comment also, but you beat me to it, jackass.
So, congratulations to Kyle, to Brandon, to Arlen, to Mushaka, to Devaney, to everybody that's involved with the production. I'm happy for you guys, and we are still pushing on our end as well. So that's awesome. At least it's the fun to get the movie kicked off and rolling. So I definitely have to say congratulations to everybody, and thank you so much to everybody who contributed for what Dennis and I have tried and been pushing, as well as these amazing people who have turned into good friends. So,
yeah, most definitely. Let's see. I see that on board we have another listener. Good evening, Howard. Thank you for tuning in to us, brother. All seem paranormal. So apparently we are very popular, brother. We have, Lyle Lotz over at Twisted Paranormal Society sitting in listening to us. We've got Ryan and now Howard from All Seeing Paranormal Society tuned in and listening. So it's a good night. We have made some great friends. Let's see. You have the chance. Look up Alicia Faye Bollinger and tell her not to feel defeated. Status that she posted 11 hours ago, feeling defeated like I'm hitting dead end after a dead end trying to find out the truth. As defeated as I may feel, I'm never going to give up until we find out the truth. Thank you for all your help and support along the way. Together we will get #JusticeForBrittany. So, Alicia, if you're listening, darling, don't give up. You know I got your back. We talked 3 times today. And I told you each time, just bide your time, we'll get through it, and we'll make this shit work. And we'll get all the documents and everything that we need. Don't sweat it.
You know, I think there's another level that we can take this to as well to try and get this pushed through, get the case reopened. With the amount of people that are law enforcement, attorneys, this, that, and the other thing, I really don't see a problem in combining everything to say, hey, yeah, this is something we can do.
Well, most definitely. We've got enough friends, both in the paranormal world, real life, that we've developed along the way thanks to Full Spectrum Radio. Yeah, we'll make it happen.
Oh, the one person I could I named off the people I couldn't tag, but Erin Marie Hogan also. She is such a sweetheart. So congratulations to her, too.
Yes, with Dwelling.
Anyway, I did, I don't know if you had talked to Ray or not. He is on his way en route. He's trying to go back home, and then he'll be calling in, joining us as a person who used to work in homicide and narcotics. So as soon as this came up and we were talking about this show, Dennis, you you text me about Ray when I was thinking about Ray would be the perfect person for this.
Yeah, and I did also, I did get to speak with Bruce Tango. He unfortunately could not make it with us tonight. He was going to, wanted to, apologize profusely. But he's doing a gig tonight in New Jersey. So I certainly understand that, brother. Bert?
Give Bruce a quick tribute for me.
You want me to? All right.
Yeah, he did say he was going to tune in and listen to the archives. So we got to give Bruce a good tribute.
All right.
And I know that you won't mind it either.
For you, brother. Oh, no, because I always get a freaking giggle out of it. It almost makes me want to pee myself. Let me see where I can find it. Am I scanning past it? Where did it go? I know it's on here. Now I'm getting pissed.
That would be awesome if you lost it.
No, I'm sure it's not lost. I just have to find it. Don't get all excited and think I've lost it, because I don't need this. This one's too awesome. Unless some little jackass got into the board. Oh, no, they didn't. Never mind. It's all good. So, Bruce Tango, brother, this one's just for you.
It puts the lotion on its skin or else it gets...
Oh, fuck it.
I still don't know which one I like better, if I like that one or the one where you were laughing so hard you fell off the bed.
Oh, it puts the lotion on the skin or else it gets the hose again.
God, I can't remember a weekend that I laughed so damn much in a long time. We need to do that again. We need to do that again.
Good drunken retreat.
We can definitely create new memories, but for some reason, between that, you running around the event, asking people if there's anything that you can do to make your costume even douchier. Now, ladies and gentlemen, if you can picture this, here is Matt running around in a black t-shirt with silver sparkly shit all over the front of it, tied up as a half shirt, belly hanging out. There are photographs of this, by the way.
Yes, and they're on my page. I posted them.
Yes, I... You know, that was one of the funniest damn things that I've had in a long time. So we definitely need to redo that. Oh, and the shit that I pulled on you while I was in, what the hell was it, Supercuts or whatever, getting my hair cut.
Oh, yeah. So what happened is I dropped Dennis off at the door, and I ran next door because Dennis said he was thirsty, so I'm like, all right, I'll run and right next to Supercuts.
You needed coffee. We were both hungover.
Yeah. So I'm like, all right, you know, just go, you know, start, get your hair cut, whatever. I'll run next door to, I can't remember the name, with Sheets.
Sheets.
I'm like, I'll run next door to Sheets, and I'll grab some coffees, and I'll bring them back over. And what did you do in that time?
Well, among the four beauticians or whatever they're called in Supercuts or whatever the place was, there was four other clients. The four beauticians, four clients, and yours truly. Well, while Matt is next door, I have convinced everybody that I will leave a $20 tip if, when Matt walks through the door, everybody, including the clients that were in the chairs getting their hair done and the one lady with the, like, you know, antenna silver foil shit sticking out all over the place looked like a pincushion. Including her, everybody froze and decided that it was time to applaud when Matt walked in the door. Needless to say, Matt made it two steps in the door, stopped to a room full of applause, and looks at me and goes, "You're an asshole." "Yes, I am, but that's funny shit."
Yeah, and that was the best thing, is the clients even applauded too. Like, the whole place just erupted in applause.
I don't know. I'm kind of thinking at this point, I was almost done with my haircut. And then Matt finally strolls in with my coffee. So I'm thinking that he went down to hang out with Juan Valdez and the donkey for a little while to get my freaking beans, come back and grind them, and then get me coffee out of it. I don't know what the hell took so long. It wasn't difficult. I told you I want the largest cup, which is 24 ounce. I want 6 sugars, 6 creams, and 3 French vanilla. What's hard about that? And he still jacked that up. Granted, I don't think it was an issue that we were actually hung over. I kind of think we may have both still been a little drunk. And headed back to the event.
Oh, yeah, for another round.
Yes.
Mind you, Dennis and I were also running around the event, not only just catering to our friends that we had met and helping them out and doing this, that, and the other thing. We were doing live shows from the event. So that was 2 hours of, "Hey, you got a second to talk? Hey, you got a second to talk? Hey, you got a second to talk?" So our heads were spinning by the end of each episode. And then our heads were spinning by hanging out with the talent and all the after parties. So, just is what it is. But the part of the reason why I wanted you to play that for Bruce is he's been a big supporter of us and all that we have going on. Helps us out when need be if his schedule, you know, collaborates with ours. I mean, it's not just we're Facebook friends. We talk on the phone. We spitball ideas off each other. Anything that we need, he will help support just the same as he did push this whole Justice for Brittany campaign as well. He shared it. He posted it. He's been talking to people about it. He just unfortunately couldn't be involved because of prior engagements. And to me, that's absolutely awesome. I mean, ever since, even before we went to the event and actually got to hang out with him in person, he would help us out with pretty much anything we need. So, along with just, you know, a ton of other people, which I mean, what I see, like, with what we were talking about with Supercuts and all that, that was also the personality of Brittany. She didn't have the "I don't care if it was a practical joke." She was on board. It just, nothing adds up of how this whole situation came to be. And Dennis, you know that even better than I do.
Oh, most definitely. I mean, I've got pictures on, well, I don't know if they're on my, let me look and see. But I have pictures of the two of us, lunch break, just goofing off, you know, just having a damn good time. She has a bucket on her head in the store, and we're both just laughing profusely, you know. It was just the kind of shit that we did. We just had fun. Now, I don't think they are on this profile, but I am looking.
No, they're on your personal.
I am looking.
They're on your personal one. I've never seen them on the CPR one.
Well, that being the case, let me do this because I know I can go over to my personal and steal them. Kind of cool like that. And here's a funny thing. I'm not even friends with my personal Facebook.
You're not friends with yourself?
No, I'm not. I don't like me because, well, I mean, truth be told, I'm an asshole. But here we go. With me. I'm typing.
Also, I have to say thank you to William for calling in and listening to the show. Definitely appreciate any support that we can get. If you're on Facebook or Twitter, the campaign we're trying to get is hashtag for Brittany.
Justice for Brittany.
Or justice for Brittany, I'm sorry. Hashtag justice for Brittany.
There we go.
So,
I just put a picture up.
Yeah, if anybody just takes a second, shares it, I like the fact for this that Facebook, or especially for this, that Facebook does recognize hashtags now. So when I was at work and I was doing the post, and this was a damn good sign. When I was doing the post, I hit hashtag and I had JUS, it predicted justice for Brittany.
Sweet.
So that is definitely a step in the right direction.
Yes. But, yeah, I just posted, Lyle, thanks for liking it, and thanks for sharing it, brother. But I just posted a picture of Brittany, and we were on a lunch break, and we're in a place called Foremost Sales, which is like a liquidation place. And we're just goofing off. Next thing I know, I turn around and she's going, hey, boss man, what do you think? Is this a good look for me? She's got this little pink weave basket on her head. But I'm like, yeah, that's definitely you, darling. There's also one of me wearing said pink weave woven basket, too.
Oh, you didn't post that one, though.
No. Oh, no. Well, I'll go do it now just to make you happy. well, hell, I don't see it now.
Oh, yeah, you mysteriously lost it.
Well, it's potential that I'm just not tagged in it, and I have, well, no, I can't see it since I'm not friends with me. I'm not friends with me. You're friends with me. Go look in my mobile uploads folder and see if it's there.
Yes,
I'm
I would definitely.
With myself. I don't like me.
Unfortunately, I am friends with you.
Yes, that's because I'm awesome.
But you don't like you.
No, I'm not friends with me. I know what an asshole I can be. And apparently, some of the spirits at the Exchange Hotel know what an asshole I can be. I think for shits and giggles, and Lyle, you may like this. I think for shits and giggles, the July event, which, by the way, just for those that didn't hear it earlier, there is another public investigation and tour coming up at the Exchange Hotel. It's July 18th. Twisted Paranormal Society is putting on.
I think I may go this time and do the tour, do the investigation. Unless they need or ask for my help, and in which case I'll hang out with them because they're just flipping awesome to hang out with. But I just might go do the full... Oh, damn. Excuse me. I got gas all of a sudden. I might just go do the full investigation and have a blast with it. So we'll see. You never know what the hell the crazy CPR dentist is going to do. If nothing else, it's always entertaining. But, hey, we have a Skype caller. So, Matt, can you take over for a minute and let me go stream this one?
Yeah, or they're just kind of the easiest phone number ever. So,
yes.
Yeah,
But I'll be right back. Babble on, my friend. Babble on.
I'm kind of good at that. I've had a lot of practice.
I'll be right back.
So, anyway, once I do have some more questions, I kind of know the information already, but I just want to confirm it before I say it. With the situation of this being a, you know, suicide case, everything that I know of Brittany, everything that I know of Dennis and her relationship, she would have reached out. She definitely would have reached out to him saying, hey, you know what, I need you, as she has done numerous, numerous times. There's been situations that were serious with her, or, you know, serious for her, I should say, that she was involved in, and then ended up coming back saying, or Dennis was able to talk her through it, like they had that relationship. It wouldn't just be a talk to you day before, everything's fine, and then gone. So, anyway, Dennis, I see that you're back. And Ray is with us. What's going on, Ray?
Hey, how you doing, Matt?
So you changed your phone number to 111-111?
No, I'm going to tell you now. So I got to be real careful. No, I don't know what to say. I just called on the home phone, so I'm not sure why I came up with that.
Sometimes it does. Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. But if you want to get a hold of Ray, just dial 111-111-1111.
It's a cool number. Remember that you've been drinking, too. So.
Yeah. And if you can't get a hold of him on that one, try 111-111-1112. And just
right.
Keep continuing from there.
So you might have to hit one first before you dial the number.
That is true. So
yeah, because
dial 111.
So it's 111-111-1111.
Unless you're calling from out of the country, then it's 011-111-111-111-111.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Or just keep...
that because I'm confused now. Matt, if you
say
one more on that line, I'm probably going to mute you. But hey, thanks for joining us tonight, Ray.
Hey, no problem. I mean, I wanted to call you guys earlier before the show started, but then I got a friend had called me and said I need some help moving, and he said I only have a few things, and I should know better than that. But I said, oh, I got this bed and a little foot locker, and it's like it won't take us long. We get there, it's a 24-foot truck, and we're moving into a storage area. So I'm like, oh, you got to be kidding me. So I thought it'd be done by 7, but I didn't get done till 9. So, but. We moved pretty quick and gave him enough crap about it. So, and it's a good thing I really like him. I probably would have killed him in the process, but but I made it back. And I think what you guys are doing I didn't have a chance to really look into the particulars of the case, and you've probably been talking about it obviously for the last hour and a half. I wanted to call you earlier to kind of get a background on the case so I didn't have to re-talk about things you've already talked about. But But it sounds like initially from the messages and emails you guys had sent me that, you know, if I understand it right, is that this Brittany, who I guess Dennis was friends with her or a neighbor in Virginia or how word?
Well, I was very close friends with her.
Okay.
Close enough to the point that I considered her my little sister. She lived with my family for about 3 months.
Oh, wow. Okay. So you knew her real well, even though it was like a neighbor or something. I mean,
I knew her very well. I'm self-employed as a contractor. She worked with me during that 3 months. So pretty much for 3 months.
When was the last time you saw her before this supposed suicide had taken place?
Well, I had talked to her on the phone the day before. I had actually seen her about 10 days before.
Oh, so it's been years since you had contact with her. And I mean, you knew her, you knew her personality, you knew what type of person she was. You know,
yeah, most definitely.
You know, initially from the little bit of information I had, it sounded as though you've got a right-handed girl who had a gunshot wound to the left side of her head, and it was deemed a suicide.
Well, that's correct.
That's the only thing. That's as much as I had gotten.
The GSW.
And when did this take place? When did the suicide supposedly take place? Like how long ago?
October 20, 2012. And the GSW was to the back left quadrant of the head.
Okay, back
lower.
Left quadrant. Lower left
lower.
Quadrant. Now, I hate to, I mean, since it's a closed, or since the case is supposedly a closed case, you know, obviously they deemed it a suicide, they closed it out as a suicide and not a homicide, then everything regarding the case should be able to be examined by anyone. I mean, it all should be subject to Freedom of Information Act. You should be able to get copies, or at least the family anyway, when it comes to the medical stuff, should be able to get, I don't know if they have a coroner system out there or a medical examiner system in Virginia, but I know that the coroner's inquest, if they have a coroner, or the medical examiner's inquest, that's all public record, no matter who you are. The actual autopsy, depending on the state, it might only be available to the immediate family, but all of that information should be readily available. And it just strikes me funny is that, I mean, normally women in general don't shoot themselves in the head. That's not kind of what they do. Whatever the reason is, I don't know, you know, what the reasoning is. Or if, I've heard people say it's because they don't want to leave a mess. They want, you know, they don't want to damage their looks in any way. And so most women will either, you know, try to, will either shoot themselves in the chest area if they're going to use a gun, or they'll use another form of suicide, but usually not a gunshot to the head. Not to say that no female has ever not shot themselves in the head, but generally speaking, that's not something they would do. And they wouldn't be shooting themselves in the left. They wouldn't be using their non-dominant hand to do it because there'd really be no reason to. I mean, when you're in that state of mind where you're going to commit suicide, I'm probably going to go over a lot of the stuff that you guys already talked about, but was there a note left, supposedly, or any way that, I mean, other than the fact that they didn't have a murder suspect, why did they give any reason why they were considering a suicide?
Well, there was a young man that she had moved in with for 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
He was questioned, I guess. I don't know how long he was questioned. He claims to have been at work and not home when this occurred.
Sure.
It was his weapon that was utilized.
Okay. Was it a lot
from? Say again.
What? How does he normally keep his? I'm assuming it's a pistol at this point.
Correct.
Okay.
Supposedly, he always kept his weapon under lock and key. And
okay.
just how convenient that the night this occurred, it wasn't under lock and key.
Were there any powder burns on her hand?
That I do not know. That's what I'm hoping to find out. We've petitioned for access to the detective notes, which the detective actually, we had an appointment today to meet with the detective, and he called about 3 hours prior to the meeting and said that he was not able to speak with us.
Okay.
Would not give a reason. His statement was several factors in this. I'm not able to talk to you. When
there's several factors in there that he wasn't able to talk to you about.
Right.
Okay. Well, first of all, here's. I mean, this is a. I mean, just being in that situation. I mean, you know, the person you want to really speak with first isn't necessarily the police. You want to talk to the prosecutor. You want to talk to, I don't know what they call them in Virginia, if it's a state's attorney or if it's a district attorney or if it's a, whoever the prosecuting body is. You know, the police don't prosecute the case. They only provide testimony and statements and evidence, and that's about it. They're not involved in the prosecution of the case other than to give testimony in court. And a lot of times with police, they're not real. You know, they always, for some reason, I've run into this myself on a cold case I was looking at from a research standpoint. That, you know, it's a lot different. This one was never solved. In your case, the case was supposedly put to rest as a suicide. So it'll be a little bit easier in your case, because if the case is closed, then almost everything would be open to inspection. Because it becomes, you know, it becomes subject to the Freedom of Information Act, with the exception of if there's some personal information of, you know, people who are interviewed, you know, maybe you'll only get their first name and then the content of their testimony, as long as it doesn't violate someone else's privacy. But you would get, I mean, you should be able to get everything having to do with the autopsy, everything having to do with the medical examiner's inquest and how they came about to determine the cause of death as suicide. That shouldn't be difficult at all, and what you need to do is first speak with the prosecution, you know, find out who the prosecutor was on the case, and then make an appointment to see them. Because, you know, the police a lot of times get nervous that, okay, someone's trying to sue us, somebody is trying to question our investigation methods, and so right away they're going to take a defensive step, you know, stance. And the I would definitely try to talk to the prosecutor before I would even talk to the police, because if there was any sort of, I'm not alluding to the fact that there might be a cover-up or anything like that. I don't know if there was any relationship between this boyfriend and law enforcement or whatever, but the most, probably the least involved in any sort of cover-up would be the prosecutor. So I would try that first, because then anything that you bring up or questions you raise to the prosecutor, they can subpoena all the police records if they need to, and they can subpoena anything they need to, because it would involve reopening the case. In other words, having enough evidence where you can convince a judge that the case needs to be reopened, in which case, you know, the family would have to be prepared to having a body exhumed and re-examined, and so it gets a little tricky with the family too, because a lot of families don't want to dig up the past, and they just want to forget about things and move on, and so that you have to have, you know, the backing of the family for a lot of that, unless you can prove that there was some sort of cover up, and then the prosecution would then go forward without the family's approval. So
yeah,
that'd be my advice on that one, to talk to the prosecutors if you haven't already tried that.
Yeah, exhuming is out of the question. She was cremated. Exhumation of the body is out of the question. She was actually cremated, and we released her ashes to the James River, which was one of her favorite places. Anything with the water was where she wanted to be.
Have you been put off by the police before? Or is it the first time they said they just couldn't Did they say they couldn't talk to you, or they just had they couldn't talk to you right then, but they need to reschedule?
Oh, no, no. It was the appointment to speak with him was granted, and I'll just throw it out there. It's Detective West with Henrico County Police Department.
Which
he granted Henrico County, Virginia. He granted the meeting. We wanted,
and it was going to be a meeting between who, yourself and him, or
it was going to be myself. It was going to be myself, a very close friend that Brittany considered a sister, and the detective.
Okay.
No attorneys so involved.
No
just
immediate
the three
family.
Of us.
No mother.
No immediate
father.
Family. No. He called about 3 hours prior to and said, "Listen, there, I cannot meet with you. I am not open for rescheduling this. I simply will not meet with you, period. There are several factors involved in why I cannot meet with you, and that's just the way it sits."
Yeah, definitely go to the prosecutor. And if you can't, you know, even if you get, you know, stymied by the county, then you can always go to the attorney general if you think that there's something. If I mean, the reason you think that I guess what I'm saying is, at this point, with the information you have, you're basically saying that you knew Brittany, she wasn't suicidal, she wouldn't have taken her own life, you knew her very well, and the fact that you had, and I'm not sure where you had gotten information, unless it was from the newspaper or whatever, about the actual injuries and where the injuries were, how you came across that information, if that was from the medical examiner's report or from the newspaper. But
they're actually from family. You know, when we asked at the, because there was a service done for at the, like, family church where the family had attended, and in talking to mother and, like, her grandparents raised her pretty much. So I've spoken with both grandparents. You know, over the years that I had known Brittany, I developed friendships with them as well. They informed me what they had been told from both law enforcement, the detective that investigated. Virginia is a commonwealth, so
yeah,
you have a...
I live in Virginia for.
Oh, okay. So, you know, the investigating, well, the officer that responded first, of course, goes in, sees a body, automatically calls the homicide detectives. Now, it's a death investigation. Let's find out what.
Absolutely. And then, of course, the coroner or medical examiner, whatever they call it there, whoever they're, I don't know, do you know if it, is it a medical examiner system or a coroner system?
That I'm not positive, and that's something that I need to find out.
Okay.
I know 90% of all questionables will end up at the CME's office, chief medical examiner's office. So I'm fairly certain that this would have gone through the medical examiner's office, not just a coroner.
Right.
You know, so there would have been, you know, swabs of the hand. Hey, let's see if we have,
yeah, there'll be powder burns on our hand.
Yeah. Let's see if we have gunshot residue. Let's see if we have this or, you know, whatever.
Powder burns on her head, depending on how close the shot was.
Right. You know, they're going to look for those things.
People are going to shoot themselves in the head. They put they actually put the barrel up against their head.
Precisely.
You'd have a definite, you know, a definite powder ring around, you know, depending on where it hit or whatever. You'd still have the powder ring. And there wouldn't be really any distance between the gun and the head. So you would think that most of that information would be included in the medical examiner's report, which you should be able to get. There shouldn't be any, I mean, other than, like, taking some of the personal information. And a deceased individual has no right to privacy. The minute they cease to live, they no longer have a right to privacy. not this information in Quest where they, you know, they talk to the mother or father and they have to state their date of birth or something like that. They'll detect that. But that's not important information anyway. You're not looking for personal information. You're looking to see how they came about their finding of suicide. And I just find it very interesting that the officer at the last minute decided not to meet with you, especially if it's a closed case. You know,
yeah, and that was the part that bothered us. Now, here's another interesting fact about the young man that she had moved in with for the 2 weeks prior to her death.
Mm-hmm.
Currently, he is in lockup.
Okay.
On felony charges of burglary,
okay,
residential burglary,
okay,
and possession of a firearm during the commission of a felony.
Right.
There have been other young women that have stepped forward that have stated that, you know, in the past they had dated him. He was extremely controlling and abusive.
Right. You figure that personality of residential burglar would kind of fit in the whole thing.
Right. Well, here's the other part that kind of scares me. There have also been young ladies that have stepped forward and said his statement to them was, if you don't perform this sex act or that sex act or whatever, well, it's not going to turn out real well. I got away with murder once. I can do it again. So that concerns me greatly. I would love to see this young man face what he has spoken of.
Unless, the one thing to consider, too, is that there may be a possibility that they've already reopened the case. And that might be one of the reasons why he can't talk to you about it.
And that was one of the things that I was pondering. Currently, there are, we have a change.org petition going on.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Currently, there are 415 supporters. It states that there were 85, there's 415 supporters, 500 needed. Now, I'm not real sure if that 500 was, Alicia actually started the petition through change.org,
mm-hmm,
and it addresses, they're petitioning Shannon Taylor, who's the Henrico County Commonwealth Attorney, to reopen the death investigation as a homicide. So I'm assuming that she put in 500 was the number that she wanted to reach before she, mm-hmm, took it to the Commonwealth Attorney.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I read through a shitload of comments that were put from people that, signed the petition. The biggest majority that I can catch on that are, I've known Brittany for years, or I knew Brittany, this wasn't her style, this wasn't something she would have done, or they were talking negative about the young man and his past.
Right. Surprises me, I don't know, I haven't read the reports, and I haven't read what was done actually on the case, and you probably don't either. So it's hard to armchair, quarterback what was done, but I just find it, kind of interesting that given initially that, a left entry wound on the left rear quadrant of the head from a right-handed person would just, I don't know how long the case was open or how long they looked into it before they deemed it a suicide, but it could be that, for all we know, they've got a tap on this guy's phone and they're waiting for him to say something stupid on a recording, and they've already reopened it. That's the only thing I can think of as to why the officer would back out that kind of mysteriously. If it would be one thing, if it was for any other reason than the fact that they reopened the case, he could easily have said, my boss said it's not, in reference, in respect to the family or whatever, he could have made up whatever reason he wanted to. but he just kind of kept it very short and sweet. I can't meet with you for reasons that I can't discuss. And that just screams that they've reopened the case.
Well, Dennis, there's something that we haven't discussed throughout the whole show, but we've discussed privately between you and I, is
the position of...
Exactly. Yeah. So she had a GSW behind her left ear. Her body was sitting upright in the chair, and the weapon that was used was found in front of her.
On the floor.
Yeah. It just doesn't... I mean, I don't know what position the body was found in. I know they said she was up... found upright in a chair, or they believe that
she was
upright in a
chair. She was found sitting upright in a chair.
Okay.
With the weapon in front of her on the floor. Now, I don't know about you, but if I put a weapon to the back side of my head, squeeze off a round, I don't think I can throw the weapon
forward.
Right. The recoil would have sent the weapon behind me.
No, yeah, it would, or at least to the side or something, but it's not going to end up in front.
Then you're probably on 9mm, not going to be sitting directly upright.
It's kind of weird, you know, the way that you'd be found upright, you would have slumped and fallen off the chair anyway.
Yeah.
You know, depending on what kind of chair it was, if it was a recliner, that's a little different, but or if it's just like a kitchen chair with no arms, I mean, you wouldn't be able to.
My understanding is she was found in the living room, so I can assume, and, you know, we all know what happens when you assume, but I can assume this was probably a, you know, stuffed chair, armchair.
You know, in that case, she might have been just reclining a little bit, and then, of course, she would have been found sitting upright, but it just doesn't make any sense to me, the side, it doesn't make any sense. Given the situation of who she was dating, the fact that they've only been together 2 weeks, the fact that her personality wasn't the fact. I don't know if there was a suicide note written in her hand or if it was just nothing like that found, you know, or nothing on Facebook or on her computer that she was, you know, talking, you know, she's suicidal, or she didn't confide in anybody that she was depressed or was even thinking about it. That kind of bothers me.
Yeah, well, like I said, I spoke with her the day before. Let me give you a little insight into myself. My father was law enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
I bounced for 15 years, so I had to learn to read people.
Mm-hmm.
I detected nothing in our conversation that, you know, gave rise for concern that there was an issue.
Right. And she didn't have a history of depression that she'd been treated for or anything like that.
Yeah, no.
And
she.
How old was she? How old was she, 19?
20.
20, okay.
Yeah, there was no no medications for depression. She was actually on no medications. As far as I know, the only thing that she ever took was birth control pills. Like I said, she lived with us for 3 months. If she got a headache, she would simply go take a nap. She wouldn't even take aspirin for a headache.
This isn't stuff. Was she working?
She was actually working with me.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it just smells really bad, the whole thing.
Yeah, and that's why we're pushing.
I mean, we can hope that they've reopened the case. Like I said, if you would have thought of Freedom of Information Act, they would have to respond. And they would have
to give
a reason why they're not giving you the information. Now, they don't have to say we're reopening the case, but they could just say, just for whatever, they can deny the request if it's an open investigation. So they may not necessarily, I mean, most states are the same, but if they don't even want to probably let on that it's an ongoing investigation, so you probably check off just another reason why they're denying it, but they would deny it. And there'd be no other reason to deny something like the police reports or anything like that. if it's a collection.
Oh, and Dennis, and especially with Ray having a specialty in narcotics, they found narcotics in her purse.
Well, no, they found paraphernalia.
Okay.
So that was a pipe. Say again?
They just found a pipe, basically. Well, whatever drugs we're talking about.
Paraphernalia,
it's either going to be a needle, a crack pipe, or a one-hitter or something like that.
Yeah, and none of the above would she have anything to do with. In the 3 months that she lived with us and worked with me, I was virtually with this girl 24/7. I had known her 4 years, going on 5 years, had never seen her have anything to do with drugs. So to find paraphernalia in her purse...
I mean, you don't have access to the, like I said, you don't have access to the autopsy reports yet. But there, as far as you know, there were no drugs or alcohol found in her system at the time.
To my understanding, and I will read, I'll read what was posted. At the time of her passing, she just started living with a new boyfriend. She was also found with medication in her system and drug paraphernalia in her purse. Brittany hated drugs. She wouldn't even take aspirin for a headache. So, and that's part of what
stuff. Did they mention any what it exactly was found in the system?
No, I do not know. That part is something that I'm waiting for. You know, once I actually do push the Freedom of Information Act, and I do get granted rights to the autopsy report, then I will find that out.
Right. If they reopen the case, they won't grant you anything. And that's one
of the things. Yeah, and I understand that. I just simply want, I want to be face-to-face with somebody that can look at me and go, wink, wink, I can't tell you anything right now.
Yeah, and that's what you'll get if it's open. If they reopen,
yeah, and
you'll get a,
you know, yeah. And the minute that I get that wink, wink, I will know that we have succeeded and this case has been reopened.
Right.
But to just get a phone call saying, "Hey, I can't meet with you. There's a lot of factors involved in why I can't. I won't answer any of your questions." That's the end of the conversation.
It has been reopened, but again, I would talk to the prosecutor. And I think you'd get a little more than that from the prosecutor as opposed to the police. But just in the way that he's saying that, to me that tells me that it was reopened. I'd be 90% sure that's the case.
And that's kind of what I'm thinking and definitely what I'm hoping. Perhaps he opened his mouth to a cellie or something.
And that's what I'm thinking. That if they know he's locked up, it's obviously the first thing he would do is that he's opened his mouth to somebody. Or who knows, even an ex-girlfriend, or like you said, there were some women that said if they didn't do this, he's already got away with murder once. He may have said that on a recording for all we know. So.
Yeah, I mean, he may have done something stupid and called from the, jailhouse phone and, said something stupid. It certainly would not be the first time that, jailhouse phones have brought new charges.
Right. And you've got plenty of people in there that are looking to cut a deal. You never know who they are, and you say something to one person, next thing you know, they turn state evidence to get a deal to lessen their sentence. They're all kind of looking out for number one.
Yeah, and that, that's my biggest hope. What I do know at this point is we have a family that, a family and a shitload of friends that were devastated at this. I can tell you exactly where I was the moment that I was told. And I was in a kayak and about 5 feet of water fishing, and my day went to hell in a handbasket. My first thought was, I failed my older brother when I was 16 by not being there, and I failed again. So this I took very personally.
Sure.
And I will see to it that either A, the case gets reopened, or B, he does something stupid and gets himself charged with it, because I know this young man had something to do with it.
Yeah, we can usually count on someone, you know, when you talk about the residential burglars and all that sort of stuff, he will do something stupid. You can almost guarantee it.
Yeah, but what if he doesn't have the opportunity because he's already incarcerated?
Right, and that's where he's going to probably be the most stupid, because you have there's no right to privacy when you're in prison, so it's very easy for them to set up put a guy in there in the cell with wiring wire, you know, or even put recording devices in the cells. And he'd be stupid enough to say something. They catch so many people that way. They recently got that guy out in Sycamore. Well, actually, it was about 2 years ago. But he was a 57-year-old case, and he killed Mariah Rudolph, who was a 6 or 7-year-old girl back in 1957. And they just got enough evidence on him. Into 2012, so it was the longest. It was the longest amount of time between an actual arrest and a murder that's ever. It was 57 years between the murder and the actual arrest. So, and that was the only evidence they really had on him was a couple inmates that he admitted stuff to that testified in court to the fact. And they didn't have any recordings on that at all. It was just a couple different cellmates that had testified that he admitted to doing it. And they had circumstantial stuff on top of that. And I think it was kind of a weak case. It's in an appeal right now, but the evidence was really weak. But they got a conviction, so we'll see what the appeals court does. But, I do believe they got the right guy, but the amount of evidence that they had, I don't think. We're hopeful that it'll survive the appeal, but it may not. But they had only jailhouse testimony and an identification from a girl who was with the deceased girl 57 years ago, and they showed her a photo lineup, and she picked out the individual, what he looked like in 1957, as the right person, as the person who was last seen with the girl. 57-year-old ID and a couple jailhouse stoolies, no DNA evidence to speak of. It's a little weak, but who knows? They might get it to stick, and they may have a lot more on this guy. I just wish they wouldn't have. I mean, hopefully they took really good notes on this autopsy, and it all still is there, and it's fairly recent, which should be. But the fact that there's no body left to re-examine is kind of troubling, but hopefully the notes are real well and it wasn't some kind of cover-up or something, that this guy was close to somebody and with an attorney or law enforcement or whatever.
So, and also hold you to this or we're going to call, or we would call on you if anything was needed, but just with the general information,
mm-hmm.
would you concur with a suicide or just lean more to possibly it's a homicide?
Are you talking about with the information that you currently have?
Yeah.
I'd have, with the information that you guys have or what you've told me, if that's all I had to go on, I wouldn't say it was a suicide. There wouldn't really be enough. I mean, it would bother me just alone, that it was just a weird place, you know, for the wound to be, given the fact that you have a right-handed person who probably wasn't that familiar with the use of a gun to begin with. I don't know if this guy took her out shooting or whatever, what type of gun it was. Do we know what type of gun it was?
My understanding, it was a 9mm handgun. That's the best that I have.
It was an automatic, and most 9mm have some sort of a safety. Very few 9mm automatics don't have a safety. I don't think there's one that doesn't. Glock 9mm wouldn't have a safety. But a Beretta would have a safety. You know, if it's under lock and key, how did she, you know, first of all, how did she get a key to it? I mean, where was the key at? Where, I mean, when they found, I mean, there's so many questions that I would have with regard to, I mean, it's hard to really say. But just if all I had to go off was the fact that it was a gunshot wound to the left rear of the head from a right-handed 20-year-old girl with no history of mental illness, no indication she was suicidal, nothing, you know, she wasn't pregnant and distraught, she wasn't, you know, short on cash, she wasn't, didn't have a terminal illness, there wasn't any other reason for her to take her life, and she was only with this new boyfriend for 2 weeks who's a convicted felon and has a history of being violent, no, I wouldn't say it's a suicide. You know, obviously it's the same as you guys would think, and you'd be looking at the new boyfriend and finding out what the heck his deal is, and checking out his alibis, and maybe they did that, but you know, people lie for people all the time. So yeah, okay, yeah, so and so was at work, and yeah, he was here and he clocked in, and you know, I mean, none of that's fail safe. His gun, new boyfriend, no reason to be suicidal. As far as I know, there's no suicide note written in her handwriting. You know, it is, you know, and again, not having the medical examiner's report in front of you to say, okay, it was a contact wound. Yeah, there was medication found in her system. We don't know what type. Yeah, I mean, he could have, I mean, do we know if this boyfriend for 2 weeks, is he left-handed, is he right-handed? If he was standing behind her, would he be shooting her with his right hand? You know, there's so many questions, but from what you've given me, I would definitely say that it's not enough for a suicide from what we have, and it would definitely be a suspicious circumstance, and I would hope they would have checked him out 6 ways from Sunday.
Well, there's another question that, for me, that came up earlier. If she was found in the living room, then call it a recliner, rocking chair, you know, like a rocking recliner, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That would actually make it even more difficult because of how high it comes up on the back versus like a dinner chair at a kitchen table or dining room table. To do a left hand or behind the left ear gunshot wound.
Right. Whose house was it? What was the location of where?
It was his apartment.
And they were living together or no?
Say it again?
Were they living together?
Yeah, she had just started dating with him, and versus being in my spare room, which I'm still pondering what made her decide to move in with him so quick.
Right. I mean, yeah, there'd be things like, was the TV going? Was there a radio playing? Was there anything to indicate? I mean, a lot of females like slitting the wrist. That's a popular one for females. Guys generally, yeah, they shoot themselves in the head for whatever reason. But I did, you know, it's not real common for a woman, a female, and especially at her age, to want to shoot themselves in the head. That's just not their preferred method of suicide. Generally, if they're going to use a gun, it's in the chest. And especially if you're not used to using a gun, you're not going to use your left hand. I mean, you're going to hold the gun with your right hand.
Or both.
There's no reason. or both hands, which then you wouldn't be able to shoot yourself generally in the side of the head with two hands. But like I said, it doesn't make any sense. It doesn't look good. And anyone can say they're at work, big deal. And it's really hard to prove time of death anyway after a certain amount of time. Do they know how quickly they how they found the body? Because after a certain number of hours, it's not an exact science as far as time of death, especially if it's more than 8 hours or so. I mean...
And my understanding is it was only a couple of hours.
Okay, then it's a little more, it's a little easier to determine time of death. It was only a couple hours later than, you know, body temperature hadn't dropped much. There wouldn't have been any rigor or anything like that. I'm assuming that they at least did the, you know, there still would have been lividity, you know, so maybe she was sitting in that chair, maybe she wasn't, but generally the lividity would show what position she died in, the blood pooling. So if she was dead in that position, you know, the lividity would all be in her butt and her feet, and that's about it. But if there was any in her back, and you know, any strange positions where the lividity shouldn't be showing up, like if she died on her back and someone were to move her and sit her in a chair after the fact, you know, you'd have a big bruise on the back, but nothing on the rear end. So there are
right.
indications of which position she would have actually died in. But I would be curious. Okay, was medication in her system? Well, how much medication? Could it have been enough to knock her unconscious, and then the guy, from whatever position he was in, put the gun in her hand, pointed at her head, you know, used her finger to pull the trigger, and then without thinking went, oops, I should have been on the other side. She's right-handed, you know, something stupid like that is what I'm thinking. You know, if she died in that position, if it was a gunshot wound, if it was his gun, what medication was she on? Was it enough to cause her to pass out or be semi-conscious or whatever that is, and then her, you know, he could set her up in a chair and make it appear as though she pulled the trigger, but this is what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
He just goofed up and didn't put it in her right hand, put it in her left hand.
And that's why, yeah, I guess my biggest curiosity, and it's something that I can ask because of so many people that this young man, is he right-handed or left-handed? Because if he's left-handed...
Is he right-handed or left-handed?
Yeah, that would play a huge factor in all of this mess.
Oh, absolutely. Especially if he was behind her, if he was behind her, and
right.
he was left-handed or right-handed. If he's left-handed, of course he'd shoot her, and if he's sitting behind her, you know, what was the position of the chair? Was it up against the wall? Or was it, you know, if it was up against the wall, that would have been kind of difficult to be behind her and shoot her in the left hand, you know, as a left-handed person. But if the chair had enough room behind it, and he's left-handed, and he decides to just, okay, set this whole thing up, set her in a chair, come up behind her as though it's the same. He's thinking, you know, he watches CSI on TV, so he knows about the angle of the shot. So he gets behind her, puts it in her hand, but he's left-handed, you know, and so everything to him is left-handed. Doesn't even think for a moment that he needs to, you know, maybe he didn't even know if she was left-handed or right-handed. They don't, you know, they were only going together for 2 weeks, and maybe he didn't even know. So he just went with the left hand, and that was it.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and those are questions that need to be answered, and they can only be answered by him. I'm not thinking he's willing to talk to me.
Well, if they did, you know, did the police interview him?
My understanding is there was an interview. I actually saw his Facebook post.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I wasn't friends with him, his Facebook at that time was open. His interview was an hour and a half long.
By the police?
Correct.
Okay. Now, they would have asked those questions if they were any good. You know, was he left-handed? Or even watched him sign paperwork. You know, if it's
correct.
Line, you know, it's noticed the right. And, I mean, they would have known if it's right-handed or left-handed.
I would assume. And those should be, you know, facts that are I would assume anyway, should be written in Detective West's investigation notes.
Oh, sure they would. Everything, well, the notes are, I'll tell you as far as procedure goes, notes are only temporary. And you use your notes to write the report, and then you destroy the notes. You get rid of them. Just because there's, you don't want to have differing information in two different spots. So you either it's SOP to save the notes, or it's SOP to destroy the notes. But it's going to be one or the other, depending on whatever their SOPs are for that particular department.
I could hardly understand what you said on that.
I was saying that depending on the standard operating procedures of each department, some departments require you to save your notes. You know, let's say ours didn't require us to save our notes. What we would do, we would have a small notebook, we'd keep it with us. If it was something, a quick interview we were doing on the street, we'd write notes on our notebook, and then we would get back and finish our report and use our notes to write a report, and then we'd destroy our notes. And the report would speak for itself. There would be no notes.
Right.
Now, some departments require you to keep your notes, you know, so those get turned in along with the report. So it just depends on what the SOPs are for the department. So there may not be any notes, but there's definitely going to be reports.
Yeah, and, you know, I'm hoping, and at this point I don't know what Henrico County PD does. I don't know what their SOP is, whether, you know, they destroy the notes or they have to maintain them.
Right.
But,
either or,
you know, that's definitely a point of interest for me.
Right. Yeah, the key to the whole thing is the medical examiner's report, what they had come up with. And then of course the interview with the guy. So I just, you know, an hour and a half, I don't know. It's hard to say. I know that when I lived in Virginia, actually I lived in Fairfax County, in Arlington County, and I know that both of those counties had really good reputations as far as police work. I'm not sure about the county that she was from.
Henrico County is one of the supposedly one of the top counties to work for.
Okay.
I don't know if that means their pay is one of the top or, you know, but they are, you know, a nationally recognized department.
Quality. And their investigation should have been decent. You know, usually there's more than one person working on the case anyway. So, you know, if you have a good group of people, you can kind of check some balances with each other and bounce ideas off one another. So chances are they did a pretty good initial investigation. But my guess is that based on your guys' petition and your contact with them, my guess is that they may have decided to reopen the case, you know, which is a good thing.
Yeah, and that's the strange thing. The only detective that I can find of record on this case is Detective West, the one that refused to speak with us today.
Yeah, no, usually how big is the county? Like, what's the biggest town in the county?
What's the officer count or
the most major town that would be in the county that she died in?
Well,
in Arlington County, it'd be like Arlington, Virginia, and Alexandria County would be Alexandria, Virginia, but I don't know what
the... Well, that's the strange thing here with Virginia. Arlington County is the county. Then you have the city of Arlington. They're separated.
Right, they are. But Arlington is still in Arlington County, though. Arlington City is in Arlington County.
Well, It's kind of strange. See, I'm actually a suburb of Richmond.
Okay.
But Henrico County has its own police department, its own sheriff's department, its own jails.
Oh, sure you do. Yeah.
The city of Richmond
has their own police department. Sure.
Yeah.
But they're both in the county.
Well,
so the prosecutor is a county prosecutor. There's no city prosecutor as far as the state prosecutes a murder or a homicide or even a suicide or whatever it happens to be. There's a death investigation. It can be done by the municipal police, but it's still a county prosecutor. So the same prosecution team would cover the city of Richmond as would cover a small town within the same county.
Negative.
No?
No. Henrico County and the city of Richmond are totally separate entities. And this is, well, I'll give you a quick anecdote about that. When I moved here from Ohio,
mm-hmm.
I lived within the county of Seneca in the mm-hmm. city of Tiffin. The county actually enveloped the city.
Mm-hmm.
The city was part of the county. Here, they're totally separate. Henrico County has nothing whatsoever.
Okay, so the city has its own prosecutors?
Yes, and the county has its own. Now, the city of Richmond itself, if you picture picture a donut.
Mm-hmm.
The hole in the center of that donut is the city of Richmond. It has its own prosecutors. It has Commonwealth attorneys that are the
state attorneys.
Yeah,
Commonwealth.
Right. Yeah, they're the state attorneys that they come in for felony charges and things like that.
Sure.
On the outer ring of that donut, you have around Richmond, you have Henrico, Chesterfield, and Hanover County. They all have their own prosecutors for their jurisdiction.
Okay.
Then you have Commonwealth's attorneys that preside over felonies. Misdemeanors are completely within that jurisdiction.
Okay. And, of course, a suicide technically isn't a criminal offense, actually.
Correct. Which is kind of jacked up because attempted suicide is a criminal offense.
Of course.
If I attempt and fail,
then you're not a criminal.
If you attempt it and you fail,
the person's dead, so there's no criminal offense.
Yeah, but if you attempt and fail, well, now you're subject to criminal prosecution.
Sure.
Which
is exactly what the suicidal person needs. That's exactly what the suicidal person needs is a criminal case on top of whatever they're going through.
Yeah, they
I've never seen anyone actually prosecuted on that. But I don't know about Virginia, but I don't think anyone's ever actually been prosecuted.
You also don't go to a penitentiary. You go to a place where you hug yourself in a white coat.
Right, exactly. Exactly.
So,
against the will. Sir.
It's a prison, but it's not prison.
Well, exactly.
Yeah.
In some ways.
Yeah, we have Henrico County has, I think, and I haven't really looked at the latest stats, but I think we have just over 2 million people live in Henrico County. The city of Richmond is one-third of that.
Mm-hmm.
So Henrico County is fairly large. I do know that Henrico County has about 2,500 law enforcement officers.
Well, that's a pretty good big county.
Yeah, they have a rather large force.
Most of them know your name.
Yes, they do, and on a positive note, by the way, you just
they know his name for a good reason? Or no. Now, how does the family figure in all that? What's their feelings on this whole thing? Are they
well,
supportive of opening?
Well, it depends on who you ask. I'm not going to lie to you.
Mother and father. Mother and father would be behind reopening this thing?
The father I haven't been able to speak with. The mother we have heard from. And actually, I will read you. It'll take me a few minutes to find this.
Mm-hmm.
But I will read you the mother's comment that she posted on the change.org petition, if I can get this son of a bitch to work right, which, by the way, when we started talking, there were 415 supporters on this petition. There are currently 418. So in the last 30 minutes, we've gained 3.
That's good.
Damn it. I keep getting something went wrong loading that content. I'm trying to find the comment that the mother posted. Dawn is her mother, by the way. Dawn is the mother. And
you said the grandparents raised the girl, so I'm assuming she didn't have a really...
Yeah, it was a rather rocky relationship with her mother. I don't know what...
Sure.
I never actually got into it with her as to what the issues with her mother was.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, obviously I can't comment on that.
Right, right.
Yeah, the mother's current husband, Brittany referred to as Big Papa, thought the world of him. Obviously, she thought the world of her mother, even though she didn't live with her and was raised by her grandparents. So here is the only comment that I can find from her mother. I'm her mother and have questioned the officer or Detective West since this occurred. There was no report done, and medical examiner had no answers. I'm thinking there's some deception there. A 20-year-old girl was found dead.
Let me get this straight. You're reading her comment on change.org, and she said the medical examiner had no explanations?
Let me read this again, just so you
hear
it exactly as I read it. Where did it go? I'm her mother and have questioned the officer or Detective West since this occurred.
Sure.
There was no report done, and the medical examiner had no answers.
What?
That's my point. There's deception in there.
That's to the mother.
That's from the mother's statement on change.org.
So there was
she
no
is
report.
Questioning. Do what?
She's saying that there was no report and the medical examiner had no answers.
Exactly. So I perceive deception in that because you know as well as I do, if you find a deceased individual of any age with a GSW, you know as well as I do, there is a report. That's no
option. A report if you
option.
Find a lost wallet.
Yeah, there is no option. There is a report.
I mean, there's a report if someone turns in a wallet and says, hey, I found this wallet and I want to turn it in. There's a report about that. So if you find a
precisely.
Body with a bullet hole in it, there's going to be multiple reports, not just one. There's
precisely.
Going to be a report from, there's going to be a report of interviews. There's going to be a report of the first officer on the scene. There's going to be a report from the medical examiner. There's going to be a report from anyone who's had any, I mean, there's going to be a log of anyone who came into the crime scene and anyone who left the crime scene. And I mean, there's going to be so much paper involved that it would probably fill a small filing cabinet. So I don't know what that means, that there is no report. Nobody just...
Well, and it's not also just...
Body. It's probably a suicide. Okay, well, we'll just call it a suicide and close it out. All right, it's done. Okay, now on to the next case. No, it doesn't...
Well, it's also not just police. I mean, you're going to have first medical responder. You're going to have, you know, first responder firefighter that walked on.
Absolutely. You're going to have more effort than you can deal with.
Why that wouldn't be released to the mother?
Evidence reports. You're going to have an evidence report. You know, there's going to be a gun that's going to be, you know, regardless if it's a murder or suicide, the gun's going to be taken in and has to be logged in. You know, any blood, you know, stains, photographs. There's going to be so much stuff that it's going to take up a number of boxes of paperwork.
Like, yeah, she killed herself. Case closed. All right, let's go home.
Exactly.
No.
Yeah, and that's why I'm saying that, you know, I get some reception.
It's not happening with the investigation. Otherwise, she would have said something like, you know, the case is closed. You know, I know all, you know, family's well aware of the situation. We're sorry that it happened. But it definitely was a suicide. I mean, first of all, even if it was a suicide, most family doesn't even want to accept that it was a suicide.
Exactly. They want to know, you know.
Yeah,
anything else?
Suicide. Most people want it looked into regardless, you know, because they can't accept the fact that it could have been a suicide. So that's the last thing that they would just accept without a report or without, you know, if the medical examiner doesn't have any explanations. I mean, the family would be the ones they would share with most. I mean, especially the mother. You know, she wasn't married, and the closest next to kin is the parents. They're gonna share more with them than they would share with anyone outside of the immediate family. So if she's saying the medical examiner has no explanations, I mean that's huge.
Now, here's my thought on it, and this is only my thought. Everybody's entitled to an opinion, and this is my thought and my opinion. I think the mother has seen everything, all the documentation, wants to put it behind her. You know, I mean, nobody, like when my brother was found, you know, hanging from a tree, I wanted all the answers.
Sure. You know,
how could he do this? Why did he do this? And here I am, let's see, I was in 86. So, you know, here we are, you know, two decades plus later, and I'm still going, this just doesn't make sense. You know, I want answers. And the mother is going, I just want it done with. Really? No. It just doesn't make sense to me. Why would you not want this case reopened? And the primary players be spoken to again. This young man is the primary player. He is the primary suspect. Everybody I have talked to suspects him.
No, you don't even have to be in law enforcement or even. I mean, let's face it. A new boyfriend for 2 weeks and someone commits suicide. Immediately you're going to think the new boyfriend. I mean, you'd have to be deaf, dumb, and blind not to think that that's the number one suspect at that point. So, So why, you know, why an hour and a half and why they didn't follow him around? And why, I mean, for 2 years? I mean, it's been 2 years since the case was first looked at. I mean, you would think that within a very short period of time they could have easily gotten him to admit, you know, depending on how shrewd he is, I don't know how smart he is. If he's sitting in prison, he's obviously not all that smart. That they could have, I mean, you could leave the case open for a long time. I mean, you could say, okay, we're thinking there could be a suicide, but until we're sure one way or another, it's going to stay open. You know, what would be the reason for jump? I mean, I'd be curious to see how quickly they came to the conclusion that it was a suicide. I mean, how soon after the body was found did they close it and say, okay, it was a suicide? Was it a week? Was it 2 days? Was it 3 months? That would be kind of something I'd want to know.
Yeah, those are answers.
There's no hurry to call it a suicide. There's no time frame. You know, there's no statute of limitations on murder. And if it was a suicide, okay, fine. They'll eventually figure it out. They don't need to close it right away, usually they wouldn't unless they were absolutely sure it was a suicide for whatever reason. And then normally they would close it out. But someone sees someone walk in front of a train, you know, and the train runs them over. Okay, that's pretty easy to assume at least it was an accident or a suicide, but probably not a homicide, and they could close it out pretty fast. Gunshot wound to a head, opposite side of the dominant hand, yeah, that should stay open for quite a while. Even if they don't actively work on it every day, it'd be very hard to come to a definite conclusion that, hey, this is a suicide or a homicide.
Yeah, and I'm not sure, you know, how much time lapsed before it was considered, quote-unquote, a closed case. And for all I know, honestly, it's still not considered a closed case. But I can't get those answers.
Well, they should be able to. They should be able to tell you if it's an open and closed case.
Well, here's the thing: nobody will tell me shit.
Really? And how many have you tried talking to the prosecutor?
Say again.
Have you tried talking to the prosecutor?
No, she is actually getting a phone call from me tomorrow.
Okay.
I wanted, and I'll tell you part of why we asked you on the show tonight. One, your expertise, your history, your past.
Mm-hmm.
As a homicide and narcotics detective, your expertise was going to help me decide how I proceed. I'm pretty certain at this point, Shannon Taylor, who is the Commonwealth's attorney, she's getting a phone call from me tomorrow, and we will book a sit-down, and she has an option. She can either tell me to get the hell out of her office, or she can be slapped with a show cause. Or she can share with me what the hell is actually happening with this case.
I'm trying to think if there wouldn't be a court. Wouldn't be, yeah, because suicide is kind of an interesting thing. Because I'm thinking if it was another type of investigation, nobody was charged. There's technically not a court case involved.
Correct.
Close the case one way or the other if it's going to be closed or open. So, I mean, it may still be open.
Well, even if it is open, the Commonwealth's attorney has to be informed of all actions and all doings involving this case. Simply because it will be up to the Commonwealth attorney to choose whether or not they pursue the case as a prosecutable case.
If it's prosecutable, sure.
So the Commonwealth attorney will definitely be, you know, informed of everything. I'll put it straight out there. Commonwealth attorney Shannon Taylor, if you're listening, anticipate a phone call from me. I mean, no disrespect, but I want to know what happened to what I essentially took on as my little sister. And I want to make sure that her death investigation was handled properly. I want to make sure that if somebody is at fault for it, that they get the punishment they deserve. So,
well, and
have you checked local newspapers to see what they had written on the case?
Well, here's the bad part. Local newspapers around here, kind of like Chicago, there's so much crime and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
They don't look into cases like this
unless
it's brought to their attention.
Right, okay. So
you know, the old saying, if it bleeds, it leads.
It says that so-and-so committed suicide and they thought it was a suicide or just to get an idea of whether or not there was actually a... it seemed one thing or the other. But that's what I'm saying. A coroner's inquest or a medical examiner's inquest as far as cause of death, of course, might just say gunshot wound to the head, but generally they're going to classify it as a homicide, a suicide, or an accident, at the very least. And that should be public information, because it's generally a hearing similar to a court case where they bring in witnesses and they bring in the testimony to decide what type of case it is. So if the medical examiner's inquest has deemed it a gunshot wound to the head and a homicide, then more than likely it's an open case unless someone's been charged. If the medical examiner's jury or, you know, they'd call it a coroner's jury or medical examiner's panel or whatever they call it in the Commonwealth of Virginia, would have to, if there's a death investigation, there has to be a public hearing as to a cause of death. What is the cause of death? Gunshot wound, homicide, suicide, or accident? You know, this person got shot. Okay, it was a hunting accident. They bring in the witnesses. They bring, because they're not there to determine guilt or innocence. They're just there to determine cause of death. And based on their findings, it drives what the rest of the investigation does. So we show up, they gather the evidence, they have a coroner's inquest or medical examiner's panel, whatever they want to call it. And so based on the testimony that we've received from the officers and witnesses and the medical examiner's testimony and the autopsy results, our final finding is that it was a gunshot wound that caused the death and that it was deemed a homicide, suicide, or accident. Then you would know which way the case is going. If they deemed it a homicide and it was a gunshot, unless someone was arrested and charged, it's open. And you're not going to get anything from anybody, including the state's attorney. And there's reasons for that. I mean, they can't say, they don't know who you are. You could be the guy that did it, for all you know, and you want to know if they're still looking at it, so you know whether or not to hop a plane to Italy.
Exactly. And
so, but
that's
should be able to find out what the cause of death was, and that's it. That should be public. You know, was it a suicide? Was it a homicide? Was it an accident?
Well, and Ray, you know as well as I do, all the on the south side, and the specific region of Chicago. I'm not going to, say that this is the cause for everything, but there's. I mean, there's shootings, there's murders, there's this, that, and the other thing. They report it, and then the next day they're reporting others. And that's kind of the way, like, certain areas of Richmond are as well. It's, it was so sad, so-and-so passed away, but it was deemed as this, it was a homicide, it was a stray bullet.
Mm-hmm.
But how many of those people that caused these shootings, especially on the south side of Chicago, it's never really investigated. I mean, it's such a concentration of gangs and drug dealers and stuff like that are never brought to justice.
Oh, I agree. But at least you would know. I mean, there's still going to be a matter, regardless if it's not investigated. They still have to determine the cause of death.
Yeah.
And it may be
that
it's undetermined. So So I'm not saying that you would necessarily have a good investigation of everything that happened. And I understand what you're saying about the South Side, and there's so many of them. And you know, if they think it's a gang-related shooting, then who cares? Because the guy got what was coming to him. So why are we going to waste all this time to try to find the guy that killed a low-life drug dealer or a low-life gang member or whatever? I understand that. But there would still be a medical examiner's report saying that his cause of death was homicide and that it was a bullet to the head. And it's still an open case, but the chance of it actually being investigated well are slim to none. But
yeah.
At least you would know then, if it was deemed a homicide and it was a gunshot wound, then the case is still open. I'm not saying that that means anyone's actually working on it. And that's kind of the situation with, you know, I've been looking at the Grimes sisters thing for a long time. But it's very tricky, because once it's an open case, even if they wanted to talk to you, they can't. So, and it's kind of a catch-22, because you want to make sure that things have been done correctly, but you have no route to be sure of that, unless you have some way of proving that there was some sort of malfeasance on the part of the officers. And the fact is, you can't get the reports then if it's open, so you can't even be able to determine whether or not there was any malfeasance. So it's really a difficult, difficult thing. And actually, if you have a department that maybe feels like maybe they didn't do a good job, and they've got some, you know, do-gooders out there that want to try to make sure that justice is served, they can make your life miserable, because the more you look into it, they can try to trump up charges saying that you're impeding a homicide investigation or what you're doing. So it gets, and we can talk about this off the radio, and I can kind of let you in on some stuff that I wouldn't, you know, necessarily say on the radio, but things that you have to be careful of if it's an open investigation. So, and I totally get the fact that you want justice served, and it may or may not be the family's wishes. Maybe it is, maybe it's not. And it really doesn't matter, because a homicide is a state investigation, and they don't need anyone's go-ahead to investigate it, because the victim is technically dead, and it's a crime against the state. So they don't need, you know, it's not as though the family can say, you know what, we don't want this investigated anymore, we want to put it to rest. It's not their choice. So although it's nice to have the support of the family, if you need to put pressure of some kind on the authorities to actually do their job. But proving whether or not they haven't done their job is very difficult if it's open, because you don't have access to the reports. You don't have access to even determine if unless you have a special prosecutor or something, and that's not going to be assigned unless you have some sort of information from the inside that there was a cover-up or a screw-up or something like that. So, but like I said, we can talk about it off the air, and I can kind of give you my experiences in that realm that you may be finding yourself entering into. You know, if you find out this is an open investigation, that's a completely different animal than a suicide case that needs to be reopened. Totally different way of going about it, and a lot more dangerous, personally.
Well, one thing that I can say about that, and since we've discussed it previously on air, was one of your paranormal experiences after a homicide that you showed up to, which was the shotgun wound to the head deemed right. fatal.
Right.
That one kind of makes a little more sense. I mean, with entrance, exit, aftermath, the way body position was found.
The fact that he had bought the gun legally.
Yeah.
He went to the gun store 3 days before, purchased the gun. It's on video. He purchased the gun, purchased the ammunition. There was a series of marital problems. It was where the gun was found, how it was found, where the powder burns were, what the wife was doing at the time all this happened. There was no drugs or alcohol found in the guy's system. It was fairly quickly deemed a suicide, for obvious reasons. But But yeah, in this situation, it doesn't seem to me, and again, I wasn't there, I wasn't part of the investigating crew, so I can't say. But just from the information that you have, and now, of course, Dennis mentioned the comments by the mother on the change.org petition that raises all sorts of red flags, too. So,
yeah. Well, no, what I'm saying is, and with the story that you shared first, you have all these things leading up to, that he pretty much did this to himself. And I completely agree with you and stuff that I've worked with people who are depressives, attempted suicides, and, you know, all that stuff throughout the years. You don't shoot yourself in the back of the head on the opposite side of what your normal dexterity is.
No, you're not.
If you,
even if you frame somebody, you know, if she hated the guy bad enough where she said, you know, I'm going to make it look like he killed me. You know, and try to make it as weird as possible and like, put it in the other hand and point to the back of your head. And I mean, that takes a lot of effort to try to bring. And you would do it when they weren't at work. You know, if you're going to try to frame them, you'd be like, okay, well, he's at work right now. Well, obviously, he's about to know about it. But I hate him so much that I'm willing to kill myself to put him in prison.
His alibi wasn't that he was at work. His alibi was that he was out with friends.
Oh, it wasn't that he was at work. He was out with friends. Well, there you go. That's not an alibi.
Correct.
Dennis, also, the other thing is, too, is if you look at the one that Ray had previously told us about, he was probably not his social self before this happened. It just happens to be who noticed and who didn't notice. You don't. I mean, that's a premeditated suicide. If you go into a gun store on a long gun, it's only a 24-hour waiting period here. So you go into a gun store 3 days prior. You buy the gun. You buy ammunition. There's one of two ways to look at it. You have either a possible homicide coming on your hands, if he's going to off her, or he switches paths, can't do it, is so depressed himself that he just doesn't want to live anymore.
Sure. Or you have the
so,
man to kill her first and then kill himself, you know, but...
Yeah.
But this doesn't have any of that.
There's
red flags all over the place, which to me it seems like it's still an open case that it was never closed.
I don't
know where you get the idea there was a suicide, unless that's just a family posting things that she killed herself, or if it was a newspaper article that said it appears as though she committed suicide, or I mean, for all you know, there was no official, unless you know some official finish on this case, it could still be wide open. It just you're getting
it. Directly from the family, the ME ruled it as a suicide.
Okay, and that's from the family.
That's from the family. That's actually looking into the eyes of the grandparents and then telling me that the ME ruled it a suicide.
Yeah, there'd be no reason that. I mean, an officer can decide whether or not he wants to talk to somebody. That's no big deal. The key is fill out the Freedom of Information Act forms, look in the copies of the police reports, and they have to let you fill them out. They have to accept it. They have to give you an answer. They just changed it. It used to be 30 days they had to, and I'm talking federally, they had 30 days to respond. Now it's 10. 10 days to respond to the request whether or not to, you know, say yes, we can provide you with information, or no, we can't. they say they can't, then there has to be a reason. They can't just deny you. Although they could, then you have a loss, then you have to take them to court. And they can do that. They can deny it for no reason, but it's just going to end up in a lawsuit then. But generally, there's certain things they can deny you on the basis of, and one of them is if it's an ongoing investigation. It's a little checkbox on the Freedom of Information Act form. So if it technically hasn't been ruled a suicide and it is still an open investigation, they would then just simply say, check the box that says it's an open investigation, and they don't have to provide any other information at that point. But at least you would know then that it's not a closed case. And they may be doing things behind the scenes, but you'll never know whether or not they truly are. They can always just say, okay, it's an open investigation. I don't have to divulge anything like that. And that's where it gets tricky, because how do you prove whether or not they're actually doing what they say they're supposed to be doing? Or they're just, you know, technically it's closed, they shut the drawer on it, but they never technically close it. They just leave it open forever.
But can Detective West, though, and thinking about this, can Detective West say he's not going to divulge information all of a sudden after saying that he'd divulge information? But would they randomly out of nowhere just open up a case or reopen a case without...
It depends. There could be someone that contacted them, of which you have no idea who, may have provided
sure.
the information which would have caused them to reopen the case, in which case they don't have to say the case is reopened. In fact, they may not want to because they want the bad guy to think that he got away with it. If the bad guy thinks he got away with it and knows that they ruled it a suicide, and then all of a sudden the bad guy finds out, hey, they're looking into this case again, he's gonna clam up. So they won't even want to let you know that it's still an ongoing investigation. However, when you fill out the Freedom of Information Act, they have to give you a reason why they're denying your request. They can't just, I mean, that's the whole reason for it, is that, you know, they have to give you a legitimate reason why they can't honor your request to get a copy of the police report or to get, because those are tax dollars used to do that. So you have a right to know what a government agency is doing with your tax dollars, as long as it's not impeding on a criminal investigation or on the privacy rights of somebody else. So even with the phone, you're going to take out some of the private information. Because you interview someone, you get their date of birth, you get their address, maybe their social security number. You know, that's something you don't want to give out to somebody. So once you make a request, it's going to be the FOIA. Everyone's got an FOIA officer whose job it is to then look over the reports and decide what information they're going to block out that you can't get for privacy reasons, and then what information to leave in.
Yeah. So, we are coming up to the last probably 6 minutes, 5 minutes of archive. Dennis actually dropped out. I don't know why. His phone probably died because his phone's stupid. Ray, what are you working on that you want to pub? Because I know there's still actually callers online who are listening to the full archive of the show.
Oh,
so,
I've got the second book is out that I've been working on. The first book was Chicago Swamp Detective. The second book is out, Chicago History of the Stranger Side, of which I mentioned you guys in there. That's out. I'm working on a third book that I can't really talk about yet. But there's also started a nonprofit a number of months ago having to do with educational programs, having to do with the World's Columbian Expo. So there are free tours going on in Jackson Park where the expo is every Saturday at 11 o'clock, and we're doing that in conjunction with the Jackson Park Advisory Council. And those will run every Saturday at 11 through the month of October. And there's no charge on those. It's just kind of wanting to bring people back to Jackson Park and kind of revitalize that whole south side of the Museum of Science and Industry area. I think that's about it right now. It's keeping me pretty busy.
Well, yeah, I definitely. Well, it's been forever since we hung out. We got to meet up again. Well,
I think you guys are doing great with this case, and obviously we'll talk at length afterwards and kind of follow up on everything that's going on.
Yeah.
I think I'd let you and Dennis know what my experiences have been, if it's an open case, what kind of issues I've run across. Nothing to do with open cases, but the pitfalls and whatnot. But so absolutely.
Well, I still have to get you the stuff on Audrey. Now, since Mark is...
You were looking to see where she was interred at. Were you able to find out where she was buried at?
I have not, because Mark has moved to Bourbonnais, and it's not as a hop... Yeah, not so much of a hop, skip, and a jump as it is to Aurora.
Sure.
So he has a police report, and he's been busy with the move and helping his mom move and all that stuff. So I haven't been able to get a hand on it yet. So,
when she was alive, where did she live?
Best remember, I mean, it's been probably 8 months since I've seen the police report.
Oh, okay.
Best I can remember, it was kind of like 127th and like Wabash.
Okay. And then where was her? Where was she found? This was the like kind of like a hit and run type of thing, if I remember.
No, she was found in Oswego.
She was out in Oswego, where she was found.
Yeah, her wrists were bound by barbed wire, so were her ankles, and she was found in the farm as well. Unless she strategically planned her body to go through a barbed wire fence and end up in a farmer's well, yeah, no.
That's pretty impressive. That's pretty impressive if she could pull it off. So it was in Oswego is where the body was found. And how long ago was it?
1987.
Okay, so quite a while ago, 1987 in Oswego. And what's her first and last name?
First name is Audrey. I've looked it up on death records and all that stuff, but mm-hmm. There's so many Audrey Moores.
Oh, it's Audrey
it's
Moore.
M-O-O-R-E. Yeah.
It still should be fairly easy to find them.
We have the autopsy report that describes her complete description with tattoo placement, like all that stuff. So...
Sure.
Just happens that Mark has it, I don't.
Oh, okay. Well, just with that information, Audrey Moore, 1987, is some sort of a death investigation. I should be able to find out where she's buried without a problem.
I've looked on numerous websites.
It's a recent death. 87 is considered recent, so you'd have to apply to the county where she died to get a copy of her death record. It'd be the only way to get it. I mean, unless someone put her on Find a Grave or, you know, did something public, you would have to write to the county and request a copy of her death record.
Yeah, I know.